From Jinden to Tarago, Bungendore to Nelligan, Braidwood FM, your local radio station.
And good morning, it's Rob McClure here with you. And we're back on air with Darren Garnon, our United Australia Party candidate for Eden Monaro. Welcome.
Oh, good morning, Rod, and good morning, Braidwood.
Yeah. Look, we've got a few questions for you. And I know that we're just about the first radio interview you've done.
I am the very first radio interview I've ever done.
Okay. Well, the first thing is, can you share with our listeners a bit about yourself? Maybe where you grew up and your current situation, what you do, your favourite hobby maybe?
Yeah, look, as a kid, I grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney, out near Green Valley. I lived out there, it was a housing commission area, and then my parents, we ended up in Ulladulla around 1974. My father and my grandfather both were bricklayers and they both worked in the high school. I can probably proudly say now that my grandsons who walked through the high school can say their great-grandfather and their great-great-grandfather both worked in the school. Yeah. Right. And I end up in, and then from there, I end up in Queanbeyan, year 2000, because I run my own business.
Yeah.
And I'd worked for an American oil company up in them days as a sales rep and end up going into the technical aspect of the game.
Right.
And I had three directors of a large Asheville company in 1997 when I stopped working for the Americans and asked me, I was still doing some troubleshooting on their machinery, and they just asked me to start making oil and grease for them. And so from very, very simple beginnings, mate, I started the business sitting at the kitchen table with my kids putting labels on grease cartridges. And so I did some formulations because I ended up studying material science. I studied tribology and then I studied chemistry.
Okay.
And so then from there, I ended up in Queanbeyan and just sort of let the business run from itself from there. So I built a manufacturing plant in Harden in the year 2010. And I've got four really good men at work out there. They run the plant. I very rarely go out there. When I do, I've got the overalls on and I'm sort of working with the lads, and I do that because it's good fun to get in touch with the guys and just, to work with them. The office in Queanbeyan still runs. I've got really good staff in there, which is allowing me to really do this. If it wasn't for those guys, I wouldn't be able to do it. And we run also in there, we run a laboratory. We do a lot of oil testing. So our business really is an oil company. So I do all the formulation side. We make it. And we're supplying directly to our customers. And we're an industrial company, and our aim is, I use really environmental style base stocks from that point of view, and the aim of what we do is to prolong machinery life, to actually get to proactive maintenance of people. So instead of being reactive maintenance when things are broken, is if you can make something last longer, your HP, your cap gains, a whole lot in there, starts to become more profitable for the company. And let's face it, nowadays, if there's no profit, we don't have businesses.
That's quite true. What important qualities would you bring to the next parliament if you were elected?
Look, I think for myself what I've said about the men I work with, the people I work with, the men and women, I love autonomy of people, helping people to grow up to be the best that they can. I've often found, I was once explained to me when I was a young fella, when I was working for the Americans, that, the word management, and people get caught up in this whole thing about management, they think it's a top-down, almost,
model.
Or being authoritative. They always worked on the theory that, it's actually to help the man to age, so you're a mentor, and that's what management should be. So help people to rise up. So from that point of view, I've always ran my business from an ethical model. I'm happy to walk away from a business if I don't think it. If they want more out of me than what, if they want personal gain out of it, I'm going to walk away. So look, I think for myself that I've always lived my life that way. I coached kids for soccer for many years, and one of the greatest attributes I ever had was there's this one kid. Every coach has a kid in the team who's got two left feet.
Yep.
Anyway, this young bloke, I just work with him like the rest of the boys. He got game time, and I can remember we got to a grand final, and he played left back, and we never won a grand final all the years I coached, but I got the boys to get there every year, and that wasn't about winning the grand final. It was actually just for the boys to be the best they could be.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the end of that season, the people were leaving Ulladulla, the family, and the parents came up to me, and I can still remember this. So I'm going back now a lot of years, and they thanked me for helping their son just to get confidence and grow. And on that same topic, one of the fellows that works for us is our blender out at Harden. The man's 48, but a couple of years ago, he's been with me now for 6 years, and I've taught him the blend, and he's very, very good at the job. And his father pulled me aside one day and said, "Mate, I want to thank you for what you've done for my son." I said, "Well," his name was Phil, the father. And I said, "What do you mean, Phil?" And he just said, "Look," he said, "my son has just, Pat, his name." He said, "I've just seen a different man since he's been working for you." And he said, "You've just given him confidence and belief that he's more than what he was ever told he could be." And I said, well, that's pretty simple, really. If you believe in people, it doesn't matter what colour, what creed they are. In my business, I've employed, I had two Chinese women work with me. I've had an Indian man who worked with me who was, they were all studying accounts at university, and I gave him part-time work in there. I employed a man who was a disability. I've had a fella who was a refugee from Senegal work with me. He didn't speak much English, but he was able to work at the back in the warehouse. And when he moved to Melbourne to be with his family, I wrote him out a really good resume, and I got a telephone call from a job agency down there, and he got placed in work. I've employed three people who were from Bangladesh, and they were all Muslims, and we all just worked and got on with each other, because I'm a believer that people are people. You know, it really is that simple. So I think what I'd bring to the parliament, if I get to occupy the, to get in there, is that I just simply do the best for this country. Like, we live in a great country. I mean, I've travelled overseas, I've lived overseas, and I'm just, like a lot of people, I think we're just getting disappointed at what's happening right now. Things aren't how they should be. People having a crack and having a go, it's just not there. So, yeah, that's what I think I'd bring to it, mate. Just honesty, ethics, and help people rise up, not put people down.
Okay. A big part of what you've just said, and from what I can understand of the UAP party platform, freedom and the role of individuals is central. It's quite important. When we come to freedoms, Australia is one of the very, very few democracies that doesn't have a Bill of Rights.
100%.
Yeah. Now, is that something that you'd support? And what sort of rights would you like to see enshrined in something like that?
Well, I was fortunate enough the other week, I got invited to the National Press Club when Clive Palmer delivered the economic policy for the party.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and Clive has actually mentioned that he would like to see a Bill of Rights. Now, Clive's a chairman. He's not running for Prime Minister or nothing like this, so I want to make that quite clear to people. But he's actually, well, from the party point of view, that a Bill of Rights, and I think we all agree that a Bill of Rights, to enshrine our freedom, our liberty, is paramount, to the human nature. I often say that, when I have conversations with people, what about you, Rodney? Have you got any brothers or sisters?
One sister.
Okay. So your mum and dad, in their lifetime, enjoyed each other's company more than twice. What was the spark? Who gave that spark of life for you, that sperm and that egg to come together? Out of the millions that were floating around that time. There's a divinity in that. There's something there that needs to be understood. It's, I think we look at the world, how it is right now, and we listen to, now, some of these so-called people who call themselves the elite of the world, and what they're pushing down at us, and I don't want to get into any conspiracy theory path, but it's out there. They've said this themselves. Who gets to decide that? It's a very simple one. One of my passions is riding a push bike. And over the years, I've been riding my bike, and I'd like to travel around. I've gone to Mount Gambier places, and I always take my bike. I get in touch with local cycling clubs. Those guys know the area, so when I go riding, I get to see some. They're often riding beautiful countryside. And often I've heard these guys say there's too many people in the world. And I go, oh, okay, this is interesting. And they said there shouldn't be so many people in the world. And I say, well, who's going to play God and make that decision who we don't have in this world? Are we saying that it's not going to be us, but we're okay to point the finger that people living in Africa, people living in the Middle East, so we want them people to be cold. We want that number to be cold, but not ourselves. And that just does not equate in my mind how you could even think like that. So how these elites are doing this right now, and what we're seeing has been pushed down, and it's, they're putting this in writing, not us. I'm not saying this off the top. This has been put in writing. We need a Bill of Rights to protect our individual freedom and liberties to live life. That's as simple as that, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. All right. Do you see a role for, and I'm quite interested in your answer to this, do you see a role for trade unions in the economy? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, look, I do. I believe the workplace needs to have association, unionship. Because if we look at what's happening, that telephone call is having just when I pulled up just then. We've seen the ATO now is going after family trust and how maybe, you know, dividends have been pushed out. But if we look at that from that point of view, small business is being attacked. I mean, I'm sure here in Braidwood and in the area itself, there'll be lots of people in business and shops been closing down. There's other ones starting up. But the cost of rents are going to be going up. We know we won't get into the economy too much right now, but we know that government bonds are on the rise. So the investors want to return their money. So if the Bill of Rights. So what we're looking at from that point of, it was Bill of Rights, I lost my train of thought.
No, that's all right. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay. So
We're talking about the idea that what are the freedoms that need to be protected?
Oh, association with unionship. Unions. Okay. Mm. So if small business has been wiped out or got been knocked around, and also if we start looking at the 20%, which is forecast of small to medium business, which could go under with the rise of interest rates, because most small businesses have their capital tied to their house mortgage.
Mm. Yes. Right?
Okay.
Yes.
So if we've got interest rates going up with the house mortgage, that's going to have an impact on the business. So if we're going to have corporations taking over in the workplace, we're going to definitely need unionship and association for the workplace to protect whatever rights are going to be left over for them people to work. Because at the end of the day, are we going to end up in the go to work for, you know, a bowl of rice, a couple of bananas, whatever analogy you want to put to it. Mm. So association in the workplace needs to be very, very strongly enshrined.
So you'd find the fact that wages have been stagnant for quite a long period of time now. Hmm. Something that needs to be turned around.
Well, it's either wages need to be turned around. We still have to put in so much money into the economy, which is causing an inflation, because this is a whole thing of this economic path where we could go to. There's so many avenues to have that discussion. Hmm. But, you know, the cost of productivity in this country, is it really that dear? Look, one of the ideas that I've been thinking about, because you're going to be the first person I'm going to say this and probably put it right the whole radio.
Oh, scoop.
Yeah, it could be a scoop, yeah. Man, I never thought of it at this point. But look, as a guy who's worked in the industry and being in and around industry all the time, one of the things I've advocated with my business has always been that let's take the farmer. Once upon a time, a farmer got his tractor. He had HP for 7 years, men with excavators, machinery, like this type of stuff. And they would use that machinery. And I'll give you an example. Someone running a 25-ton excavator.
Okay.
That machine's going to have to work somewhere in around about 1,500 hours a year minimum to get a break even or BEP on that machine. Mm. Then at the end of the 7 years, that machine is now looking at 10,000 to 12,000 hours of life on it. And that machine can often be, then needs to be traded in. So then they'll go again with HP and go again. So you've got this constant cycle of debt that you're working all the time to pay this machine off. Now, I had one of my customers 1 year, and we spoke about this. And after a period of time, he found I was right. So the machine was at 12,000 hours. It went in to go on a shaker because Komatsu were wanting to buy the equipment to go overseas. And all the link pins, the hitches were all still tight. The hydraulic pump still had full flow. The motor still showed full compression, blah, blah, blah. He decided to keep that machine. He owned that machine. So now for the next years that machine was working, and he still has that same excavator. He hasn't had to buy another machine. He didn't have to go into the debt again. He then was able to build his business up. Because if you look after what you've got, away you go. So therefore, right now, everyone's talking about bringing manufacturing back to the country. And I'm a manufacturer. For me, it's one of the most important things you can do. And the reason I'm a manufacturer, when I grew up in Ulladulla, I started this business. A dairy farmer said to me one day, he said, "Whatever you do, Darren, treat your business like a farmer." So I said, "What do you mean by that?" You know? And he said, "Make sure you own, you have the production from the floor right through." Mm. Hence the reason I went, okay. And obviously, you know, I'm always intrigued about how things work. So hence the reason why I ended up becoming a manufacturer. I didn't wake up one day and say I'll be a manufacturer. It was just a natural progression. I started small and I slowly added to it. The other thing is, I can tell you right now, I don't carry debt in my business. The reason being because I don't pay myself some exorbitant wages. I live in a very modest, humble house. I jokingly say I make oil, I ride a push bike, and last year I rode 10,000K in the year, and this year I'll probably not get to do so much because time restraints, but I'll still probably get around 7,500K. Me and my wife, our other passion is paddling a sea kayak, and I often joke the only two things that make these things work is my energy.
Yeah. Okay. That's a very interesting way of looking at it. The one of the things that actually came up in the debate last night, and it's something as an ex-educator quite close to my heart. The government have increased the cost of humanities degrees exponentially. They really have. And there was a fellow I felt quite sorry for last night. He was a young guy. And he was saying he's $90,000 in debt before he starts. How do you feel about that? And is it the right direction that we've gone in, or do we need to really rethink it?
I think we really need to think it, Rod. Like, seriously, what if we want to be a smarter country and get back to, you know, the skill sets that we used to have in this country? Because if you're a young man with, you know, a bit of nous, or a young woman, when I say man, I'm just talking about human.
Yeah.
Both sense.
Yeah.
Right. So if we look at that from that point of view, why a young fellow who can go on and add to his country, say from an educational intellect point of view, he can go and do an apprenticeship and be earning money. And if we get back, if you're an educator, a young person at school nowadays, and I think whether the school system is failing men, especially young boys with mathematics and so forth, the way the curriculum is working, but if the young bloke wants to leave school, it used to be, 16 and 9 months or 16 and 10 months?
14 years and 9 months.
That's 14, was it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is what puts you at the end of year 8 or year 9, if I remember.
End of year 9.
Yeah, okay. All right. The old third form for me.
That's it. Me too.
So what you're looking from there is let them young people, men and women, go into the trades. Now, by the time you're 21, you've got a job now. It's probably, you're going to earn that amount of money. And this whole aspect of this modern parent wanting their kid to go to university, like for me, I did a trade. My grandfather said to me, you've got a brain in your head, son. The day you started to use it, he said, then you go and do something with it. Man, I was living in Ulladulla. I just wanted to go surf and play rugby league in winter. And,
yeah.
You know, like, I didn't know any different. But then I got to an age, and I've always been a reader. So then I got this job with the oil company, and I started as a cold call commission salesman. So no one paid me a wage. And I looked at this one and went, you know what? I get paid for how many times I put one on top of two bricks. It's the same thing. It's about your performance, about how much you learn or how much you want to improve yourself. And that's how I started in this industry. I backed myself, right? Then from there, I then went and found the subject matter, because there's no way in the world, Rod, that how many kids at 18 really know what they want to do?
They don't. Generally don't.
Exactly. You know, I was the same. I didn't get the 27, 28. I went, you know what, I've had enough of it. And I was running my own business, I was working for myself.
Yep.
It was like, well, I'm going to move on. And I just went there and found, well, I found a passion. Someone gave me an opportunity, whether it was, again, divine intervention or whatever, but I found a job. I love what I do. That's the big thing. I had to make the decision on this, whether I run this for politics, right? Because I'm no politician. I'm just a bloke who wants this country to be better than what it has been and stop the rot, quote, unquote.
Yeah.
But I've got a job I absolutely love. I love working in my business. I love working with the people I work with. I would quietly go back and do that. If someone else can have the same attitude to saving this country as me in our electorate, mate, you go and do it.
Yeah.
I really feel it. You know, I've got 7 grandsons, and they're all boys. So I've got one on the way, so the family's hoping that might be a girl. But, you know, it's like I want them to have a future. I want them to have the opportunity that you had as a young man when you left school. I want them to have the same opportunities that I had. Because if people really think that's going to be there in the future, I doubt it very, very much. And I've seen employing young people coming through my business. What I would say, and I'm not saying everyone, but the handwriting, the illiteracy, mathematics, I'm sure I could ask you a maths question right now and you better do it in your head. These guys have got a just simple thing like change, and they've got to use a calculator.
Mm. Yeah, that's where technology sometimes is a two-edged sword.
Yes, yeah.
It really is. One of the areas that because we're going down this track, and it's your role in business and industry is quite interesting. One of the big changes that I've seen in my lifetime is that there was a time when public utilities, railways, electricity commissions, whatever, BHP, big multinationals, they trained their own apprentices.
100%.
Yeah, they did. Yep. Now we're subsidising big companies to train our young people that they're going to need and use.
Well, the two things, all those organisations you just said, they were once owned by the people.
There's some truth to that too.
Yeah. They were once owned by the people. So, you know, it was obviously then they put back into the people, which is your community.
Mm.
So I didn't elaborate on this economic plan. I got the scoop. So look, what I'll say to you is this, I'll be very, very simple. I started talking about people machinery.
Yep.
Now, I've already spoken to some of the men who have engineering shops, and this can be a top and filter right down to a fellow who wants to work in his garage.
Yep.
Now, where this came from, many years ago, I met a man at Sussex, England, working in no bigger than a garage, because as a salesman, you know, you're looking for machinery, you know, as a young bloke to this. And he was sitting there, and he had two plastic extruder machines, and all he was doing was making red, green, and orange bottle lids. And they were going to Coca-Cola, Sprite, and Fanta.
Right.
Right? Now, if we go back to it, if every council in our region, so first of all, the Utamanara region is as big as some European countries and bigger than most American states.
Yes.
Why we operate in a segregated point of view has got me, but I think there's six LGAs in our region, if I remember correctly. Well, maybe some of the mergers have changed that number a wee bit. But if we start, if every council, one of the first thoughts I had was, why aren't they putting workshops, mill shops, etc., back into their businesses, into their training rooms, workshops, okay? But then obviously, on another topic, most of these merged councils are now going broke, and we're all looking at 40% rate hikes in the next 12 months.
Right.
Yeah, right? So I think we need to look at the economic competency of these people who are sitting in their in our local communities, calling themselves mayors and councillors, and the GMs that they're employing.
Okay.
You know, I really think that's something that needs to be addressed.
Right.
But if all these councils were there, let's just take their civil machinery to start with, they all have cutting edges, they all have tines, they have points, etc. Instead of going and buying them off, say, Caterpillar, who's getting them made in China and brought them to this country, let's have them made here in Australia. So you could have, if you had, say, three large engineering shops or four or five, whatever the number is, but those, they might do the major stuff because of their size, but then you get into the smaller stuff, that can filter down until eventually it's one man's sitting at home in his garage doing it. Now, I have a mate who's now is doing this. He bought an EDM machine and he's making apex seals for rotary engines.
Okay.
At home in his own garage.
Okay.
Right? Then what he's doing, he's hardening them and going from there. Now, one of the pushbacks I've got from this, people say, oh, but Australian wages are too dear. Well, okay. Let's just say that cutting edge is going to cost you $100 more. Well, it might be a hanger for the truck. It might be the S-cam for the back of the trailer. But idle machinery doesn't make money.
Mm.
So that $100 you're going to pay extra for that part, right, is going to be very, very cheap because, you know, an excavator could be charging anywhere between $100 and $150 an hour.
Mm.
So if that machine's sitting idle for a week, that $100 part is all of a sudden looking very cheap.
Mm. Mm. So you're quite open to the idea that we should be getting back to more of a partnership between business and like a social contract almost.
Exactly. Start at the ground. Community. Stop having government from top down. Let the people get motivated at the bottom again to improve their own communities and come up.
Mm.
You know, it's
taking us back to the days of when we did have a rail system in the country.
Yeah.
One of the funny things is that I'm listening to governments talking about, you know, the great rail corridor that's being built.
Mm.
We actually had one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my old man was a train driver. I know quite well what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But they shut them down because, well, anyway, that's another story altogether. We're just about out of time, but look, it's been lovely talking with you, and I'd like to have you back sort of further on during the 5 weeks, and we can sort of explore a few more issues. But until then, thank you very much for your time, and thank you, listeners. I hope it's been as interesting for you as it has been for me.
Yeah, look, I've really enjoyed it, right? It's from my first interview. I hope I've gone okay.
Oh, I reckon you've done okay.
It's been a pleasure. So to the people at Braidwood, thank you for taking the time to listen to us, and I will be happy to come back and speak again.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
This is Braidwood FM.